This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Over 95 million of us invest in mutual funds, directly or indirectly. Social Security aside, mutuals are the repository of America's retirement funds. Amid the ashes of the tech bubble and the ruins of Enron, mutual funds largely escaped the recent round of bankruptcy indictments and scandal until September. Suddenly, state and federal prosecutors established inquiries into allegations of widespread fraud in dozens of mutual fund companies. Congressional hearings began here in Washington today, and nervous questions are being asked about America's $7 trillion investment. Two of the most prominent are why federal regulators did little to curb abuses that insiders describe as open secrets, and why did the industry itself tolerate those practices. Later in the program, we'll look at the recent flurry of strong economic indicators and look ahead to see if those upticks are expected to generate any new jobs, plus your letters. But first, mutual funds. In a few minutes, we'll speak with Paul Roy, an official at the Securities and Exchange Commission, who testified before Congress today, and we'd also like to hear from you. Has this news about illegal trading shaken any faith you may have in mutual funds? Has it affected how you plan to invest your money in the future? And if you advise people about their investments, what are you telling them now? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from the studios of member station WXPN in Philadelphia is Don Phillips, managing director of Morningstar Incorporated, an independent investment firm that researches and evaluates mutual funds. And it's good of you to be with us on Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
First of all, help us understand the abuses that these mutual fund companies are accused of committing. And I guess one by one, we'll go to them. The first, I guess, is called market timing.
Well, market timing is jumping in and out of the market, owning securities on one day, then selling them the next day. And the issue with market timing is that if you're jumping in and out of a fund, you're causing the fund manager to have to go into the market, purchase a lot of securities when you enter the fund, and then to sell all those securities when you leave the fund. And that raises the cost for all investors in the fund because those brokerage costs are spread amongst all of the investors that are in the fund.
There's nothing illegal about it, though.
There's nothing illegal about market timing, although a number of mutual funds in their prospectus will have language that says we want to discourage market timing or we'll only allow so many trades. And what Elliott Spitzer has claimed is that a number of fund companies create the impression that they're not going to allow market timing, but then have cut side deals with certain large accounts or even potentially of some internal members of the investment company who have traded in excess of the amounts of times that the prospectus would lead you to believe you could trade.
Elliott Spitzer, the Attorney General of the State of New York, whose investigation triggered a lot of this. The other practice, though, aside from market timing that people are looking into is called late trading, and as I understand it, that is illegal.
Late trading is patently illegal, and this is a real disturbing thing to find this happening anywhere within the fund industry. You know, one of the cardinal rules of the mutual fund is that it has one price per day. A mutual fund will set its price at 4 p.m. Eastern time, and anyone who's invested in the fund during the day, their trades are held until 4 p.m. What's been alleged here is that some people have been allowed to buy into the fund after 4 o'clock and still get that 4 o'clock price, whereas typically if you buy after 4 o'clock, you would get in line for the next day's 4 p.m. pricing. The issue here is think of how many times companies come out with major statements after the bell rings on the New York Stock Exchange. Microsoft might come out after the bell and say, we expect to have very good earnings that we're going to report tomorrow. Well, once that happens, you've got a pretty good sense that the technology stocks are going to be up sharply the next day. If you can then enter the mutual fund at the price that was set before Microsoft made that announcement, you have an advantage that the other shareholders who had to get their trade in before 4 p.m. didn't have. Elliott Spitzer alleged it to betting on a horse race that's already been run. I don't think that's quite the right analogy. It's like betting on a horse race after you've already had the opportunity to see how the horses come out of the blocks. You've gotten a good idea who the early leaders are, and that gives you an unfair advantage.
It certainly cuts down the risk.
It cuts down the risk, and it's unfair to the other shareholders because if you're going in with that knowledge, you put a bunch of cash into the mutual fund. That means that's going to be extra cash that the manager has the next morning when he or she starts managing the fund, which means collectively the shareholders in the fund have less exposure to the stock market and a bigger chunk of their collective assets in cash. which means that if someone's doing this systematically, you as a long-term investor, you have diluted concentration or diluted exposure to the market on the up days and concentrated exposure, if the market timers pull out, on the down days in the market, which really will undermine your returns over time.
Coming and going, I think, is the phrase for that. Our phone number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And let's get a caller in. And this is Jonathan, who joins us on the line from San Antonio, Texas.
Hi.
Hi.
My question is, I'm a person who invested a little bit of money a long time ago in a mutual fund, and basically I've lost touch. I get the statement, but I don't really keep up with it. How does a person like me who's not well-educated on it go about finding out whether or not my company or the mutual fund that I was in is involved in some sort of scandal?
Go ahead, Don.
Well, the key is, you know, first to figure out what the name of the fund you own is, and then to simply track that against the news reports. One thing is the settlements that are going to be reached here. If there has been some damage done to your fund and you are due some restitution, the fund company will track you down and will make you whole on that. And one thing is that all of the fund companies who have been involved to this point, I believe, have said publicly that, you know, if it's demonstrated that their actions hurt shareholders, that they will step up and make the shareholders full. That doesn't make things right, but it is a step in the right direction.
Can I make one more question?
Sure.
How would I go about taking some kind of litigation towards the company, and how do they measure? How would they probably go about measuring what kind of compensation, since we're talking about an investment that there's really no way of knowing how much it could have gone up, or do they have a way to calculate that?
If you've been looking at those returns, the quarterly reports, Jonathan, over the past few years, that's how much they've been going down. But anyway, go ahead, Don Phillips.
Well, Jonathan, I'm sure that if you have a claim to be made, there are plenty of class action lawyers out there who will find you to make that claim. But you know, you're not going to get rich off of this. It's not as if you know, these fund companies have stolen a huge sum of money from you. You know, it's not as if the case that your investment should be worth two or three times what it is. You know, collectively, all of these actions that are alleged, you know, it may mean, you know, just a matter of nickels, dimes, or perhaps only a few dollars on your account. What's at stake here is not that a lot of money was stolen from a handful of people, but potentially a little bit of money was taken from a huge number of accounts. That doesn't make it any less worse, but don't expect some kind of windfall here from your mutual fund, as if you're now holding a lottery ticket that you might get, you know, a huge amount of money in restitution.
Good luck, Jonathan.
Thank you.
Appreciate the call. Joining us now from his office here in Washington, D.C. is Paul Roy. He's director of the Division of Investment Management at the SEC. That's the Securities and Exchange Commission. He testified this morning before the Senate panel that's looking into alleged mutual fund improprieties. And thanks very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon, Neil.
So what did you tell the senators this morning?
Well, the first thing we told them is that from an enforcement perspective, we're committed to moving quickly to identify the wrongdoers and the folks who've engaged in this reprehensible conduct and hold them accountable. Your earlier question that went to restitution, I assure you that that's front and center on our agenda. One, to send a strong message that we're just not going to tolerate this type of activity. And the SEC, working with the state regulators, is committed to rooting this type of activity and these wrongdoers out of the industry.
Now,
and then secondly, you know, I talked about our regulatory response to these abuses. In my division, we're responsible for regulatory policy. And as Don indicated, late trading is already illegal. Market timing is not, except when you get into situations where there are undisclosed arrangements. You're treating shareholders differently, giving large investors favors and allowing them to trade, and treating small investors differently, not allowing them to engage in the same trading activity. We think those are problematic. They're violations of the law. However, from a regulatory policy standpoint, what we want to do is make sure that we tighten these rules up so we don't have these abuses in the future. So we've been looking at mechanisms to put in place to deal with late trading. Part of the problem comes from the number and different types of intermediaries that sell mutual funds today. They're sold by broker-dealers, they're sold by financial planners, advisors, third-party administrators that run pension plans and do the record-keeping, And some of these folks we don't regulate, and mm-hmm. it's difficult for us to get a handle on exactly what they're doing. So we're going to tighten those rules up, and we've been looking at what we call a hard 4 o'clock cutoff to get orders to the fund so that you can't play games with late trading. With regard to market timing, most funds have disclosures. However, the disclosures is not they're not as crisp and sharp as we'd like to see them. We want them to disclose clearly what their policies are, when they will enforce those policies, and when will they waive those policies, and under what circumstances. And then we want to make sure they have policies and procedures in place to adhere to those policies. And then we've been looking at the requirement of having a chief compliance officer in every fund who's accountable to the independent directors of the funds to make sure that policies regarding late trading and market timing and other provisions of the federal securities laws, that they have procedures in place to ward off these kinds of abuses in the future.
Now, you said that these abuses won't be tolerated. And one of the things reading about it, what I know about the securities industry, you could probably squeeze into a thimble. Mm-hmm. But insiders are quoted in newspapers in the past couple of weeks. And again, this is, I guess, to some degree, at least in retrospect. But they're saying these practices were an open secret on Wall Street. And after the round of, between Enron and the tech bubble and all of that sort of stuff, a lot of people are saying, how come the SEC has not jumped on this a lot sooner?
Okay, well, I think we have to parse through what, at least from my perspective and our perspective here, the commission was known. I think market timing, as something that funds had to deal with, mm-hmm. Was something that we were aware of. I mean, that, probably every investor out there at some point is trying to figure out when to buy and when to sell. Now, we, as Don pointed out, market timing can have a disruptive effect on the funds. And indeed, what we have been trying to do was to work with the funds to develop tools to thwart market timing activity. Last year, the staff did a letter allowing funds to delay exchanges, moving from one fund to another to combat market timing activity. And that's the way a lot of it is done. They're moving from one fund to another to try to profit. And we gave the funds additional tools to deal with that. A lot of what flows from market timing is in the international fund area is what's referred to as the stale pricing issue, where the securities are closing 12, 13 hours earlier, and you got a closing price, say, in Japan, but the fund is valuing at 4 o'clock and using that 13-hour-old price, closing price on the Tokyo Exchange to use it as 4 o'clock value. We have indicated to funds that they have to update those values when there's a significant event that dictates that value is no longer accurate, cutting off the arbitrage opportunity. So we've been trying to deal with those issues. But what has emerged recently is what I would call a new species of fraud. I mean, we have not, to this point, seen portfolio managers market timing their own funds. I mean, it's outrageous, and we're going to come down hard on these people.
And that's what the allegations are in these most recent cases.
That's part of it, and then it goes beyond that. I mean, we've got evidence of fund groups giving out the portfolios. The funds have to publish their portfolios twice a year. They were giving it out on a selective basis to large investors to curry favor with those investors and allowing them to trade against their own funds. I mean, it's gross breaches of fiduciary duty, and they're going to be held accountable, and we're going to clean this up.
Paul Roy, we have to cut away for a break in just a moment. Can you stay with us? I wanted to give a listener a chance to ask you a question.
Sure.
Okay, Paul Roy is with us. He's director of the Division of Investment Management at the SEC. Also with us, Don Phillips, managing director of Morningstar Incorporated. We're going to continue this after a short break. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Or you can send us email. The address is totn@npr.org. We'll be back after a short break. I'm Neil Conan. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing the investigations into alleged illegal trading in mutual funds industry. Our guest is Don Phillips, who's the managing director of Morningstar Incorporated. Also with us is Paul Roy, director of the Division of Investment Management at the SEC. That's the Securities and Exchange Commission. If you'd like to join us, 800-989-8255 or send us email TOTN at NPR.org. And I wanted to give you a chance to speak with the person at the SEC. So Kathy's on the line with us from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Kathy.
I just wanted to find out, with all of the transactions, I presume there's like thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, and people trying to hide them, what kind of evidence are they going to be able to find? And isn't the paper trail just going to be, like, fantastic?
Well, Paul Roy, that's exactly what up your alley, isn't it?
Yes, it is. And what Kathy outlines is, you know, the challenge that we have in trying to identify these kinds of problems and these kinds of abuses. If you look at the conduct in some of these situations, the reason it wasn't detectable is because they were destroying the records. They would put an order in with the broker, timestamp it before 4 o'clock, and then they'd make a call after 4 o'clock, after there was market moving information, and give the broker the go or no go signal as to whether or not to go forward with the trade. So when you get into that kind of collusive type fraud, it is very difficult for us to find. But I can tell you this, that we're onto this now, and there's a comprehensive investigation being conducted by the SEC as well as the state regulators, and you're seeing heads roll. You're seeing people paying a price for this type of activity, and we're going to continue until we, again, root it all out.
Don Phillips, whose heads are we seeing roll?
Well, we've seen a number already. Larry Lasser, the CEO of Putnam Investments, lost his job today. That's a very senior, long-term official in the mutual fund industry. So we're seeing very senior people. We've seen a number of key executives at other fund groups. Putnam also has laid off 6 investment professionals. So there's a very real message being sent to anyone that works for a mutual fund management company, and that's that if you do not obey or live up to the highest ethical standards, you will not be working at these firms.
Kathy, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And Mr. Roy, I wanted to ask you, at also testifying this morning, as we mentioned, was the New York State Attorney General Eliot Spitzer. And here's some of his specific recommendations, including what to do about the issue of restitutions. Here's Eliot Spitzer.
In addition to full disgorgement and restitution to shareholders, there will need to be a disgorgement of all, and I repeat the word all, fees that were earned with respect to any fund during the period of time during which there was illegal behavior. This number will be big, it will impose pain, and it should.
Paul Roy, obviously you work for another agency, the SEC, but I wanted to get your reaction to that proposal.
Well, I think that from a regulator standpoint, and I'm the rule writer here at the Commission, you know, I can write, you know, rules again to try to deal with this activity. But if people figure they can get away with this, then, you know, the rules aren't going to do any good. And so I'm all for stiff punishment and, strong action against the people who've engaged in this wrongdoing. So we'll have to see how each of these cases sorts out. You know, Mr. Spitzer has his jurisdiction and will be bringing cases. And, of course, the commission, you know, we have civil authority where we can impose fines and penalties, and the commission will have to make the ultimate judgments on the severity of those punishments. But from my standpoint, I think there should be strong punishment because these rules need to mean something.
So there should be deterrent and pain, as Mr. Spitzer's word would be a deterrent.
Well, that sounds pretty severe, what he's outlined.
Yeah, let's get another caller on the line. Jane is with us from Smithfield, Utah.
Is there a strong possibility or probability that truly independent directors will be required for all funds?
Paul Roy, that's another suggestion of Attorney General Spitzer, among others.
And that's been one of the focuses of some of the folks who are looking at these issues, just, you know, what was the role of independent directors in these various situations. And I can tell you that the independent directors aren't exempt from, you know, our scrutiny of what went on in these circumstances. We want to understand, you know, where the independent directors were on these issues. But, you know, there's a definition of independent director in the statute. We've identified some gaps in that definition and made the Congress aware. Congressman Baker on the House Financial Services Committee has legislation pending that will move to tighten up some gaps in that definition. But, you know, even with a definition that is tighter than what we have today, really independence is a state of mind. And I think that what, you know, we're all working towards is trying to get independent directors, you know, to understand their responsibilities and act, you know, solely in the interest of the fund investors.
Paul Roy, we know you're busy. We thank you for taking the time to speak with us today.
Very good. Thank you for having me.
Paul Roy is Director of the Division of Investment Management at the Securities and Exchange Commission. He spoke to us from his office in Washington. Still with us, Don Phillips of Morningstar Incorporated. And, Don, I guess before we go further, how widespread is this? I mean, dozens of companies have been at least allegedly involved in fraud.
Well, I tell you, the mutual fund industry is going to get the most thorough scrubbing it's ever had in its history because intense, good regulators like Paul Roy are on the job. And we're going to see exactly how widespread this is. I happen to think that the regulators are mining a pretty rich vein when it comes to the market timing of among investment professionals of their funds. You know, part of it is that these people, these men and women who manage mutual funds, they tend to be active traders. That's what their job is, to go in, look at the market, see what's happening, move money around. It seems only natural that at least in some cases that kind of high action method of managing money would spill over to their personal accounts.
For those who are impossibly dense about financial affairs, like me, explain again for us, what would be suspect about a fund manager market timing his own fund?
Well, market timing per se isn't really that much of a concern. There is a cost element involved in it, but market timing is just the means of extracting this benefit. If you've got some inside information, like the late trading, if you've got the ability to buy in at a stale price, or if you can do this time zone arbitrage that Paul Roy described, mm-hmm. if you're able to buy international funds at stale prices, then you've got some you haven't identified an investment inefficiency in the markets. What you've done is identified an operational inefficiency in the mutual fund. And if you're taking advantage of an operational inefficiency, then that really is doing wrong. It's not right for the fund shareholders. And market timing is the means of taking advantage of that inefficiency.
That's the mechanism that's involved. Okay.
That's the mechanism.
Let's get a caller in. This is Kevin from Lansing, Michigan.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
My question focuses on mainly on Putnam, although I know other companies have been alleged too for doing wrong. But I've heard that some states like Rhode Island, their Treasury Department has fired Putnam for their wrongdoing, and I'm concerned about that particular company because my wife has her entire 401k with Putnam, and I'm wondering if there's area for concern about her 401k, since more than one state apparently has decided not to no longer do business with Putnam.
Yeah, I think Rhode Island followed Massachusetts' lead.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. A number of major accounts like that, states said they're going to pull their money away from Putnam in excess of $4 billion last week. And you're not the only one taking that seriously. The management at Putnam and the independent trustees of the Putnam funds took that very seriously. And as I mentioned earlier, the CEO of Putnam Investments, Larry Lasser, was fired earlier today. And they have some new people that are in place. There are some people that we have a lot of confidence in, a gentleman named Ed Halderman, who had a good record at some other fund organizations. And the evidence on him is that as soon as he got any word of wrongdoing at Putnam, he put down his foot and said, these people that have been involved in these wrong practices have to go. So there's new management at Putnam that I think may stem some of these outflows. There may be additional states and additional people that decide to pull money out, but I don't think you're going to see a run on the bank scenario at Putnam, because I think a lot of institutional investors are going to sit up and take notice of the very decisive steps that Putnam took this morning.
And Don Phillips, I should remind listeners that you're managing director of Morningstar, which evaluates mutual funds and how they're doing. So it's your business to know what's going on in these companies.
That's right.
Kevin, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Here's an email question. This one from Susan in San Francisco. I've been informed the mutual fund in which I have invested is indeed being investigated. What is the risk I'm taking by remaining in this fund, and what actions would your guest recommend I take to protect myself?
Well, I wouldn't worry if your fund is being investigated. Almost every major fund complex has been hit with a subpoena, and the regulators are looking at them, and that's entirely appropriate. In a scandal of this sort, it doesn't make sense that the regulators should give free passes to any organization. So as I said earlier, every fund company is going to get a thorough scrubbing. I wouldn't be worried simply if it's been mentioned that there's an investigation going on at one of your firms. if one of your firms, if their actual charge is filed against them and they get in the paper, what you really want to do is pay attention to them and see how they respond to it. Get an idea of what's the magnitude of what went on at the firm and then what's their response. We have seen some examples like Putnam today where you've seen the fund companies take decisive action that begins to give investors some assurances that these things that have happened in the past will not happen in the future.
And when the leaders of these companies, some of them on their way to resignation, said that they would be happy to make good any losses that were suffered by their investors, do they have the kind of financial wherewithal to make good on those promises? Obviously, we don't know the full extent of the scandal as yet, but in general?
Absolutely. And the money management industry is one of the most profitable businesses in the world. And even in the wake of the terrible bear market we've been in the last couple of years, if you look at the publicly traded asset management firms, you still see them showing robust profits. So finding the money to make restitution is not going to be a problem for the majority of these mutual fund management companies.
Email question from Ted Albee in Vancouver, Washington. What is being done to curb some of these abuses is great. Unfortunately, he writes, I have the sinking feeling that a lot of my money that was invested in some of these funds will wind up lining the pockets of a few class action attorneys. Where will the settlement money come from?
Well, that's a good point, and unfortunately that may be, to some degree, what happens. But I think that the good thing here is that there's a tremendous amount of visibility to this. As I say, the regulators are on the case. As an investor, you've got Elliott Spitzer in there fighting for you. You've got people like Paul Roy fighting for you. And I think the fund industry is taking this very seriously. At first I thought that there were some fund officials that were pretending that this was going to be something that just passed by. It's clear to everyone in the fund industry that this is a serious issue, and it's one that if they don't step up and regain the public's trust, that this industry is going to suffer immensely. And I think the industry is up to the challenge. I think they're going to demonstrate to the American public that mutual funds will remain what they've been for years. And that's one of the cleanest, best-lit playing fields in all of finance, a place where investors do get a fair shake.
Let's go now to Gene, and Gene's with us from Panora, Iowa.
Thank you. My question is, why did it take the New York State Attorney General to uncover this mess rather than the Securities and Exchange Commission, which is charged with overseeing the mutual fund business and the stock market?
A question that may have come up on Capitol Hill this morning, but go ahead, Don Phillips.
Gene, I don't know the answer to that. I can tell you that the men and women I've met that work for the SEC tend to be very dedicated, very hardworking people. But you're right. For whatever reason, this wasn't uncovered on their watch. I can guarantee you that they're redoubling their efforts and whatever it takes to give the SEC the manpower or the funding that they need to do a good job to keep these markets fair for everyone. That's a step that collectively we need to take. I think they're good people at the SEC. I don't buy into the notion that they were just asleep at the wheel. But for whatever reason, they weren't doing. It took an outsider to come in and point out some of these things that were happening. But I guarantee you the SEC is absolutely positively on the case today.
Well, you say they're on the case today, and yet doesn't the different corporations fund the SEC, and to some extent they try to keep them deliberately underfunded so they cannot do a good job of investigation?
No, I believe the funding for the SEC comes from the federal government, not from it's not a self-regulatory body that's funded by the fund management companies. The SEC is a government entity whose job it is to keep the markets fair for all of us.
Thanks very much for the call, Gene. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking with Don Phillips, who's managing director of Morningstar Incorporated. And Don, I guess a lot of people are asking the question today, should I stay in or should I get out of mutual funds? I guess in some respects, that's at least part of your business. What do you tell them?
I think there's strong reasons to be in mutual funds. Jack Bogle's the founder of the Vanguard Group, and he's probably been the most outspoken critic of the fund industry in recent years. And yesterday he was quoted in the New York Times that there's no better investment or there's no better vehicle for long-term investment in the mind of man than a mutual fund. It really is a wonderful structure that if the industry embraces not only the letter of the law but the spirit of the law under which the funds are organized, this is a vehicle that should put the shareholders' interest first, and it gives you instant diversification, it gives you professional management, it gives you great convenience. Mutual funds are a wonderful way for people to invest. But clearly the confidence in funds has been shaken, and it's up to the industry to address that challenge and to demonstrate to investors that funds will be a clean, well-regulated area.
Let's go to Dale, who's on the line with us from Petaluma, California.
Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
You know, when I look at this and I read about it, and then I go back and I look at Enron, Tyco, and that, is there just a breakdown in ethics in American business nowadays that I'll get what I can get, and I really don't care about my customers? Because I'm in business, and I tell you, this just, I just think this is totally absurd. And I think the biggest problem also is that when people get caught, nothing happens to them. You know, they walk away with the money, they get slapped on the wrist, and, you know, I think the risk is worth taking.
Go ahead, Don.
Dale, some of that's changing. You know, there are some fund executives who are facing prison charges. Things are changing. There is going to be a penalty to pay. But you're right. I mean, what we have here, though, I would say is not just limited to American business. It's related to society in general. And what we've seen here is that the people that work for mutual fund companies aren't cut of a different moral cloth than the people that work in other lines of business. And they're subject to the same kinds of temptations. And unfortunately, you know, you're seeing some evidence of some people that didn't live up to the standards that they should have. But I don't think that that means that everyone in the fund industry can't be trusted. I don't think that you can extrapolate from that to say that that there's something systematically wrong with the system. But clearly there are individuals who did not live up to the standards that they should have, and especially with the mutual fund where it's a fiduciary responsibility to investors. These charges, as you point out, are very, very damaging, and they're something that should have you hopping mad.
I just wanted to follow up on Dale's question. We just have a little bit over a minute left, and I don't mean to pin you to an awkward position or situation given that time limitation. Dale, thanks very much for the question, by the way. And that is, you know, after, yeah, they were going ahead with mutual funds, they were relatively untouched by the Enrons and the Tycos and the tech bubble burst. Didn't anybody say, you know, maybe we ought to look at ourselves before somebody else looks at us?
Well, and that's exactly what should have happened. I think the fund industry started to believe its own press clippings, that this was a scandal-free industry. And that's absurd. I mean, any industry is going to be subject to that. And the fund industry did not meet up to the expectations that some of its leaders thought it would. The good thing, as I say, is that the industry is getting a thorough scrubbing, and it's going to be very clear to investors when the dust settles on all of this, you know, who the good players are and who are the players who have misstepped. So you may not have a great idea today who you can trust, but believe me, when this is over, you'll have a real good sense of which funds lived up to the standards you expected of them and which ones did not.
I understand you're taking the train south tomorrow to speak to the House Financial Services Committee on this question?
That's correct.
Good luck in your testimony.
Thank you very much, Neil.
That's Don Phillips, who's the managing director of Morningstar Incorporated, an independent investments firm that researches and evaluates mutual fund. The company's based in Chicago. He was with us from the studios of WXPN in Philadelphia, and as we mentioned, he'll be testifying before the House Financial Services Committee tomorrow when they take up this question. When we come back from a short break, we're going to go from the scandals in the mutual fund industry to the broader economic indicators, which are all on the way up, except for jobs, and we'll find out whether expectations for that might be rising as well. I'm Neil Conan, Talk of the Nation, NPR News.